Blog Talk Radio.
Oh, yeah.
Welcome to season 5 of The Woman at the Well, hosted by Beverly Black, advocate and the creator of Gumbo for the Soul Publications and Tribe Family Channel. This is Women's History Month, March 3rd, 2019. On The Woman at the Well, today's guest speakers for the first half will be Letitia Baker, who is a survivor of domestic violence, an advocate, a model, and an actress. On the second half will be Valerie Simon, who is also a domestic violence survivor, advocate, and soon-to-be author. For those of you listening online, if you'd like to call in, the number is 347-539-5285. If you have called in and you'd like to listen online, please follow our studio at blogtalkradio.com/gumbo for the soul. The Woman at the Well and Tribe Family Channel are Gumbo for the Soul International Family Brands, created, owned, and operated by Beverly Black, all rights reserved. Visit GumboForTheSoulInternational.com for more information. And ladies and gentlemen, I am Beverly Black, also known as Beverly Black Johnson, the publisher of the Gumbo for the Soul series anthology. Now, we are about to get this show started, but let me preface for you The Woman at the Well. Not that I've had 5 husbands and the 6th wasn't mine, as in John 4 of the Holy Bible, any version you want to look in, for the story about the Samaritan woman who met the Messiah at the well. But I can testify to a loving God that I serve, that knows all things about me and has shown me that he is my creator and has all power and rule over my life. And he is a loving, forgiving, magnificent, omnipotent God. And it is my honor to serve him and to share my voice here on The Woman at the Well. This season, we are continuing with Me Too moments. The road to healing is paved with reflection. You may not remember the day it happened. You may not recall the time. You just know how it made you feel. Your Me Too moment changed everything. But you don't have to feel alone. Come to the well and speak your truth. Share your Me Too moment. Your strength and your courage will help others. Ladies and gentlemen, it is an honor, a privilege, and a pleasure to welcome to the well, Letitia Baker.
I am doing well. How are you? Thank you for having me.
Great hearing you and having you, and it is an honor and a privilege to sit at the well and speak with you. And I only have a limited amount of time, so I'm going to delve right into it because I want to hear everything that you have to share, and you can be as transparent and as laid back as you'd like to be. And if for any reason your call should drop, simply call right back and I will see your number in the booth. You ready to get started, Queen?
Yes, ma'am.
All right, now. Cool. Okay, well, this is a multi-part question. Tell me about the adolescent, innocent version of yourself, where you're from, the family dynamics, and what you wanted to become when you grew up.
Okay, as an adolescent, I was one of those children that wanted to do modeling. When I got older, I had siblings. Me and my older sister, we loved to dance, so we choreographed dances and things like that. As far as family dynamic, I mean, the dynamic in our household, My parents weren't married. They weren't together. So I was a child that was going back and forth between homes every other weekend and during the summertime. So, but, you know, even though that was a challenge for me being an adolescent, I think it gave me both worlds. So that's a little bit about my background.
Mm-hmm. All right, all right. All right, well, let's dive right in. What was your Me Too moment?
My Me Too moment was January of 2000. It was New Year's Eve going into New Year's Day. And my ex-husband at the time, he decided that he wanted to take my away. He had, we were at a friend's home, and he decided that, you know, this friend was a lady. He decided that, you know, she was more important at the time. So when I got home, I had spoken to him, and I said, well, I think this isn't going to work for me. And I got up to remove his clothing from out the closet, you know, because, you know, I was just over it, and because he was cheating, he was name calling, he was doing a lot of stuff prior to him actually putting his hands on me. So in this particular night, he decided to shove me. So when I got up, I decided to swing back, and when I came to, I went to the bathroom, and I noticed that I was missing my front tooth was chipped, my bottom tooth. My eye was black. It was big. I had a knot in the middle of my forehead. I couldn't even feel the left side of my face. When I asked him what had happened, he was like, he said, just don't worry about it. Just don't worry about it. So I decided to call my mom and ask her to come get me. I didn't even think to call the ambulance, 911, or anything like that. And then when I got off the phone with her, she was like, go to the hospital. So I asked him to take me to the hospital. Out of all people, I asked him to take me to the hospital. But we get in the car. He decides to tell me a story. He said, this is what I want you to tell them when we get there. I want you to tell them that you went to a club, that you got jumped by a bunch of girls, and I'm bringing you to the hospital. Okay, so I get to the hospital, and the lady, the nurse came to me and asked me what happened, and I didn't say anything, and he was standing right next to me. And when she took me to the back, I heard a lot of commotion while I was in the back, and it was the police. They had called the police for me, and the young lady explained to me. She said, I already knew what happened as soon as you came in. You didn't even have to open your mouth. And that was one of my Me Too moments, because domestic violence, when you talk about it, is just not one of those things where it's so black and white. So he would threaten my family. He would threaten my friends. He would say, I will come hurt your mom. You know, he would do different things. It was almost like a fear tactic to keep me to get me to stay with him. So, of course, mm-hmm. after all, everything happened, they told me I had a broken orbital floor fracture in my eye. So they had to repair the bones in my face. My nose was broken. I was paralyzed on the left side of my face. They had to repair my teeth. And then I went back. After everything healed, I went back. I'm not going to sugarcoat it. I did. And it wasn't because it was one of those things where, you know, you had love and then you were fearful and all those different emotions all at once. And then when I went back, We had an argument, and he decided to pull a gun on me. I didn't know whether the gun was loaded or not, and not only did he pull a gun on me, I had my nine-month-old child in the same room. And we got out of that situation, prayed and I prayed and I prayed. I said, God, if you get me out of this, I will not return. My nine-month-old started crying, and I said, oh, my God, the baby needs to eat. We have to get out of here. The baby needs to eat. So he was like, okay, we'll go get something to eat. He put the gun in the back of his pants. So as we were outside, I wouldn't say anything, and he took control of the stroller of the baby, so he had control of her. So almost to say, if you decide to say anything, I got more control of the situation. And and I was just like, you know, we end up going to a store, and I saw the police, and it just so happened police happened to be there. And I think he already had it in his mind that I was going to say something because he had left. And I had not seen him. He had left with the baby and everything. And the police went back to the house and...
Wait. Let me just slow you down, because if you skip over, it's disconnecting the story. So you went to the store and he left you at the store and strolled back to the house with the baby, and the police were at the store. And is that what I'm understanding?
Yes.
Well, so you said he left.
Yes, he actually... I think he knew in his mind I was going to say something to the police officers that was in the store, because I did have marks on me when we got to the store. So when
basically they're parked outside. I just want to understand
everything.
So they're parked, though. The car is outside and they're in the store. So he doesn't enter the store. You enter the store, and he stays outside with the baby.
No, we both entered the store.
Okay, he enters the store with you. Okay.
He went down one aisle, and I went down a different aisle.
Okay.
And as I was going down the aisle, I seen a police to my right. But when I went to look, as I was talking to the police and I looked back, he was nowhere to be found in the store.
So you did approach the police to make a report?
Yes.
Okay.
So as I was given a report, he was nowhere to be found in the store. So he was dispatching other officers to the home because he did have my baby. And he had a gun with him. So, you know, they wanted to make sure that the baby was going to be okay and all that good stuff. So he made me sit there with him while all this was going on. Then a police officer dispatched him back and said, we have him and the baby and the weapon.
Okay.
So they end up locking him up. I end up calling my mom. I wasn't living in Baltimore. I was actually living in Atlanta. And I didn't have any way home. I didn't have no money. You know, I left everything, cars, furniture, everything. His dad ended up calling me and saying, you know, what's going on? And I gave him the information. He said, call you right back. He called me back within 15 minutes, and within the 15 minutes, he said, I got a bus ticket for you and the baby to go back home. So as in the morning. So the morning came, because he was in jail he was in jail at this time. So as morning came, I had packed what I could in a duffel bag, and as I was walking out the door, he was walking in. His mom had bailed him out of jail. And that was the most scariest moment I had ever had, because I didn't think I was going to see him as I was leaving. Thank goodness I had someone there to drive me to the train station, I mean the bus station, so I can catch the bus to get home. And he didn't do anything. But I know if it wasn't for the grace of God and him saving me, I wouldn't be here today. Because the extent of my injuries, the doctor has stated, if he would have had hit me one more time, caused my nose where it was broken to go into my skull. The very first time, I did call the police. When he got locked up the first time, domestic violence wasn't on the radar as it is now. They gave him anger management classes, and he couldn't do nothing within 6 months. If he did something within 6 months, he would have to end up going back to jail. So, you know, it was just, it wasn't as...
Okay, let me ask you this, because that is like just reprehensible right there. He is fractured and broken bones. You have had to have reconstructive surgery. And at that particular time, the DA didn't stick it to him. I mean, that is just, and I understand that it's more prevalent now to go after abusers, male or female, and to heighten awareness as to how critical and how dangerous the path of people's lives are in the hands of violent abusers. But it's just reprehensible to know that, you know, someone can be beaten within an inch of their life. If you're, you know, paralyzed on one side and broken bones and in need of reconstructive, and, you know, it's just reprehensible that, you know, that a bail could even be set, first of all, you know. But describe, and thank you so much for your transparency, for allowing me to, you know, for you to go deeper into it, because, you know, your testimony is about being transparent, and it's about walking in that strength so that others can, who aren't as strong as you are, can be an overcomer, can become an overcomer. So when we see, you know, you walking in your strength, it strengthens another sister who's not as strong. You're a role model whether you want to be or not. So I want you to describe the strength you're walking in because of that experience.
The strength I am walking in now because of that experience, I would say my strength is coming from God, because if it wasn't, I don't think I would be able to and just speak to other people without having moments. My strength comes from forgiveness. I had to learn how to not only forgive him, I had to forgive myself. We always want to, as women who go through, we always want to say, what could I have done different? What did I do wrong? What did I say that was wrong? We tend to blame ourselves for issues that weren't even ours in the first place. So my strength comes from learning how to forgive. It took me a long time to be able to take pictures, even model and be in front of a camera. It took me a long time because all of the injuries, because I felt as though everybody could see what I had been through. And sometimes it's still a challenge for me, but I feel like I'm overcoming it. The more I stay in prayer, the more I speak to other people about it, And, you know, I just, the more and more and more and more I speak on it, it gives me more strength to know that this is where I'm meant to be.
Amen. All right. If your 25-year-old self could reach back in time and mentor your 5-year-old self, what words would you tell her to hold on to for dear life?
My 25-year-old self.
Could tell your 5-year-old self what words to hold on to for dear life.
Hold on to your strength, your courage. What else? My 5-year-old self. Hold on to your heart, your spirit. Those were the things I would tell my 5-year-old self. Be careful of who you just give your heart and your spirit to.
Amen.
That's who I would tell my 5-year-old self.
Amen. Amen. Okay, as an advocate, what are you doing now?
Actually, I will be coming in June. I will be hosting my very first and very own Speak Out. It will be...
Congratulations!
Thank you.
Yay!
I have spoken at various engagements of other people. However, I think the takeaway of what I've learned is it's not, domestic violence isn't just a woman's thing. And my Speak Out will be well-rounded because it's going to have the words from an abuser and the actual victim and different things on that aspect. So that'll be coming up in June, and I'm excited about it. I have some wonderful speakers that's going to be speaking, and, you know, it's just going to be, I just can't wait. I'm so excited.
Well, I'm excited for you, and you're giving, you know, power to voice and uplifting and just giving a platform for healing and empowerment is, you know, that's what it's all about. So that's phenomenal. Kudos to you. I want you to keep me abreast and privy to all of the events that's in your purview. Hit me up on email, tribethefamilychannel@gmail.com. And now, where can our listeners connect with you if they want to keep up with what's going on?
I am on Facebook. My Facebook is Tisha Baker. I'm also on Instagram. It is butterfly_behavior. Those are the two platforms they can reach out to me. I also have a separate one that gives towards domestic violence, and it's called Survivor Stroll. And if you want to follow me on Instagram under Survivor Stroll, they can follow me there too as well.
All right. That is awesome. Congratulations and continue blessing with the soul work that you're doing. And I want to thank you for honoring us with the gift of your presence. Feel free to listen to the second half of our show. Our guest is Valerie Simon, who is also a domestic violence survivor, advocate, and soon to be author, who we will be speaking to right after this commercial break. Okay.
Okay.
All right. Thank you again for being my guest on The Woman at the Well. We'll talk soon.
Okay. Thank you for having me.
Awesome. It's my honor. All right, ladies and gentlemen, that was Letitia Baker, survivor of domestic violence, advocate, model, actress. You heard her story. She didn't hold back. She was transparent, and I just appreciate her for her honesty. So we have to be aware, and we're going to offer some phone numbers and resources at the conclusion of the show. But right now we're going to go to a commercial break, and when we return, my guest will be Valerie Simon. So stay tuned.
Hey guys, it's me, Michelle Berard, host of Somewhere in the Middle and founder and CEO of Urban Book Editor, LLC. Are you feeling like you're stuck and can't move forward? Have you been struggling to birth a big goal like a book or a business? Are you feeling overwhelmed and looking to make changes in your career? If you're at all like me, when that deer in headlights feeling hits you, you just don't know where to begin. Yeah, you can talk with friends or family, but when you're in need of an objective opinion, it helps to speak with someone who's prepared to listen and to provide practical guidance to help you move forward. That's where a coach comes in. That's why I'm so excited to share with you that energy worker and coach Julia Black and I have teamed up to help you get unstuck and start moving towards your goals again. And to make it easy for you, we're offering a complimentary call with one of us to help you start moving forward. All you have to do is go to WeRiseMovement.com to schedule your free insight and inspiration call with either Julia or me. The insight and inspiration call can help you get clear about your goals, uncover hidden challenges that may be hindering your progress, discover steps you can take today to move toward accomplishing your goals, and you'll leave the session feeling renewed, re-energized, and inspired to take action. Visit WeRiseMovement.com and schedule your free insight and inspiration call today. That's WeRiseMovement.com.
All right, welcome back to season 5 of The Woman at the Well. I am Beverly Black. I'm an advocate and the creator of Gumbo for the Soul Publications and Tribe Family Channel, hosting The Woman at the Well. Be sure to visit me online at www.gumbofortheSoulInternational.com for more information about our open calls for submissions for our series anthologies. So now, ladies and gentlemen, we are going to continue the show. I want you to help me welcome my next guest. Her name is Valerie Simon. She is a domestic violence survivor, advocate, and soon-to-be author. Hello, Valerie. How are you, Queen?
Grace and peace, grace and peace. Great afternoon. How are you doing, Queen Beverly?
I'm so blessed. It's such an honor to hear your voice. I'm reflecting on our in-depth conversations, and so I am really excited for you to share your voice on The Woman at the Well. Now, I want to thank you for listening to the first half, and you've heard, had the advantage of hearing the dialogue, and I'm going to pose the same questions to you. So are you ready to dive on in?
I sure am. Thank you so kindly. I do want to thank you and your group for having me on to be a part of such a tremendous outlet to have individuals express their purpose and express the challenges that they've had in their life.
Well, you know, I give God all the praise. We have such a phenomenal team of supporters and sponsors and host of other shows on Tribe Family Channel. This is not something that I'm doing on my own. There are a plethora of people and energies that helped me, and so I want to thank them, and I want to thank you also for being here and for your kind words. Now, I want you to tell me about the adolescent, innocent version of yourself, where you're from, the family dynamics, and what you wanted to become when you grew up.
I am originally from Brooklyn, New York. I was born and raised in Fort Greene, born at Kings County Hospital in Brooklyn, and also frequented the Crown House area when my auntie and my uncle would take care of me when my mom would take her ill. I am a sibling of four others. There's one other sister, and I have three other brothers, one in Vegas, two in Wilmington, North Carolina, and a sister in Raleigh, North Carolina. I was born to a mother. My father was in my life very short-lived due to domestic violence. The family had forbidden him to be around my mom due to some incidents that occurred between him and her. Unfortunately, that prevented me and my sister from having that fatherly role in our lives as we feel we should have had. And my mother, at the time of birthing myself, she was already suffering from severe mental illnesses. So my mother, I was raised by a schizophrenic mother. She had a lot of episodes in my life raising me, which I spent close to 5 years in foster care in Queens, along with my sister, and my innocence was taken in foster care. So from a little girl on to age of maturity, I've had a lot of different challenges and struggles for various reasons. One of my first reasons was my first episode of domestic violence was by the hands of my own mother due to her mental illness.
Right.
So that led me to becoming a teenager that was very inquisitive. And what I also found out and what I'm learning now, back in those days, or now the strategic word that they use for it is a promiscuous. However, no one really took the time to focus on where did my behavior, my traits, or my characteristics, what were the underlying factors of that? No one took the time to recognize the underlying factors was my innocence had been stripped from me. It had been stripped from me in foster care. It had been stripped from me from family members who are no longer here. And it had been stripped from me through associates who I thought did not look at me in that way, but did. So by the time I became 15 years old, I was pregnant with my first son, who is now 36. So I was a mother at a very, very young age, forced to mature practically overnight. Because at this time, I'm responsible for a child. And in my mindset, I did not want my child to have a mother that could not be a real mother to him. So I've always tried to be the best mom that I knew how to be with the resources that I had.
So like you said, you had to grow up fast. And before your innocence was robbed of you, before the series of Me Too moments, what did you want to be when you grew up?
Be a nurse. I wanted to be a nurse until I had my first child. After giving birth to my first child, I realized I couldn't take being around people in pain. And that feeling of what I wanted to be could have also been robbed by a lot of the trauma that I endured as a young girl. It may not have been so much of the pain that I indulged or received or went through giving birth. I'm sure there are a lot of other underlying factors on which stripped me of the dream, because my dream was to be a nurse.
Right, absolutely. And I can imagine, I mean, you were stripped of a lot, so your dreams would be in the same pool as your innocence and, you know, time as a child is robbed from you, forcing you to have to grow up so fast. Describe the strength you're walking in now because of these experiences.
Wow, that is a very good question. And that goes really back to the title of your show for this afternoon, The Woman at the Well, and I want to not fail to mention I am dedicating my voice tonight to someone who was very dear to my heart. We didn't have a long relationship, but from the very first time that we connected, it was a very fruitful relationship. It was a tangible relationship, and her name is Queen Mika Nicole. She passed away in January of this year while going in for surgery, and so my heart has been really broken from that, because she was scheduled for a surgery. She went in for the surgery. She didn't make it. And I myself, I'm here today as a miracle, because a little over 2 years ago, I went in for a one-day surgery, and I coded. My heart stopped. I was left with right left vocal cords. Both were paralyzed, had to be on life support, breathing machine, sent home with oxygen on a ventilator, had to go through speech therapy, occupational therapy, physical therapy. But here I am today because of individuals such as Mika. They were those women at the well that continued to push, that gave me a foresight that I too can be more than what my past has dictated that I will be. So I began to see myself for far more greater than what others saw me as, or I began to see myself in a greater value than what my past dictated. I began to see that I was not that little girl that just was stripped from her innocence, but I was somebody who could be able to be a voice for those who were ashamed of what happened to them, who were afraid to speak out because of what has happened to them. I began to realize, because I was always one that loved to engage in stimulating conversation. Even as a little girl, I'm the one of the children that grandma would say, go get in your room, because I'm trying to hear everything. And I always had a comment for everything. So I have now realized that those were my strengths. And I have now became in a place of my life where I am operating off of my strengths, my gifts, and my talents, and I'm moving forward with my purpose.
Amen, amen, amen. Wow, congratulations, because I know when I get to the part about what you're doing now, and like it said in your bio, you will be an author soon, so we're going to find out all about that. But before we do, if your 25-year-old self could reach back in time and mentor your 5-year-old self, what words would you tell her to hold on to for dear life?
Her innocence. Her innocence. Her innocence. Would be the words. If my 25-year-old can reach back to my 5-year-old self, I would tell her to hold on to her innocence and never allow the bad things that may have happened to her prevent her from being all that she is purposely put on this earth to be.
Indeed, indeed. Okay. What are you doing now? I know you're an advocate, a soon-to-be author. You have organizations that I see you're connected with. So what are you doing? What is Valerie Simon all about?
Currently, Valerie Simon, as you said, I am in the process of completing my very first book. And that book is going to be entitled Scribbles in Bits, Bits and Pieces of Me. That book will be published. Yes, yes. And the title was birthed in me in New Jersey about probably 6 years ago, because I never give anyone my full story. I give everybody a bit and piece. There may be some people on the line right now that never knew I was in foster care. There may be some people on the line that knew I was in foster care but didn't know that I was raped and molested in foster care. So I've never given anyone the full Valerie. I've always given people a bit and piece of me, and I've had to operate with those bits and pieces. So now I'm learning that those bits and pieces all have value. And I'm in a place in my life now where I will not allow anything that I have went through to be devalued, because I have worth, and my worth is to help others overcome where they feel that they don't have value.
You know, and when you talk about those bits and pieces, these are the puzzle pieces that when they fit together, they make up the sum total of Valerie Simon. And that's the strength that you are evoking, the message that, you know, you are conveying. And it's really all of us are a sum total of our experiences. Now, how we now react to the effects of these experiences and what, you know, we have gone through and what we continue to hold on to and what we've released, what we've healed from, all of these make up for those bits and pieces. So I want to congratulate you and commend you for what I know is going to be very enlightening, putting out and publishing your story is like giving birth. So anytime you feel like you want to reach out, as you know, I am a publisher and I do mentor. And, you know, just continue to walk in that strength and allow, you know, your story to unfold as organically and as, you know, powerfully as you deem necessary, because you are walking in your strength. You are walking in your power, and that power is going to convey in your story and allow others to know that they can be honest and they can be transparent and that their healing is in their hands and in their power as well. And that's one of the things that I have learned most recently, is that my healing is in my hands. There's not a soul on this planet that is responsible for your healing. You know what hurts. You know what hurt you. And your healing is your responsibility. You know why? Because the people that hurt you aren't going to give you the gratification of healing you. They hurt you. And that's what you have to remember, is that they are the ones that hurt you. Whether you forgive them or not is up to you, and whether that is incorporated in your healing is really up to the individual. But I do know that for me, my takeaway from my Me Too moment is that my healing is in my own hands. So with that being said, I really want to thank you for the gift of your presence, for honoring us to hear your story and to, you know, share your voice and be as honest and transparent as you have been. You know, God bless and keep you and continue to allow you the success and the healing as you revisit and tell your story and open, you know, new avenues and streets that you haven't gone down in a while, recalling and remembering what you need to evoke in your book. So I just want to, you know, shed prayers and strength over you as you take this journey. And I want you to let our listeners know how they can connect with you and where they can find you. But you can comment first and give us some, you know, bits and pieces of you as we come to the last 10 minutes of the show. And then we'll find out how people can stay connected. But you have the last and final words. It's
great,
my honor.
Great. Well, in addition to soon becoming a author, I'm also an empowerment speaker. I am a certified purpose coach. I am a domestic violence and mental health advocate. I am a voice for the voiceless in the community. And I recently became a certified Yoni practitioner. And I'm also a prison ministry liaison. And what that title stems from is I am a mother of four sons, and all of my sons have been in and out of state and county jail and prisons. And there is another book that will be written almost simultaneously that I've already started on, and that is From the Heart of a Prison Mom. I've been to prison, but never as an inmate. because even though my son did time, I've also did time with them. Those times that I've done with them may not have been in the same perspective that they did it, but it was very traumatizing, painful, and still at times is very painful for me to relate to as well as process. So I have taken all of my pain, and now I'm involving myself to take accountability and let my pain become power and become a tool and a resource for me to help others identify what their purpose is. Because in my life, I've realized it's my pain that identified my purpose. I didn't realize really what my purpose was until I realized the amount of pain that I have survived. There are things that I have survived that there are plenty other sisters and brothers that have gone to their grave that are mentally ill to a point that they cannot, they don't know their name, to a point they don't know what day of the week it is. But here I am, the higher power cared so much for me and knew that whatever he began in me, that he shall complete it until the end. So when you get that thing about the woman in the well, I just started really thinking about how she met up with the Messiah there. And according to the Holy Bible, Jesus was not even supposed to be dealing with a Samaritan woman. But he asked
come
her
on now, you're
for
preaching.
To drink. And because of her obedience and giving him something to drink, which is her obedience to servitude, because I enjoy serving people. I enjoy loving people. I enjoy putting love into action. Sometimes is that receptive? No, but that's what I have been called and chosen to do. And I am here to let the listeners know that your obedience to whatever your calling and your purpose in life is will open up doors that you will never thirst again. Because here this woman, because of her obedience, the Messiah told her, I will give you water where you will never thirst again. And began to
thirst
tell
again.
Her about her five husbands. My well may not be your
hers.
Well. Come on.
Come
your
on.
Well may not be my well. I may not have the issue with five husbands, but we all got a reason to be at the well. And the other
now
thing
you
that
better
is
preach.
Significant. Oh, yeah, we do. Oh, Queen, we all got a reason to be at the well. It's at the well where
you know,
find your healing.
And let me just say that because I'm a quoteologist, and one of my quotes is everyone is hurting and healing from something.
Yes.
So you are so right.
Yes.
We all have a reason to be at the well. And I'm glad you said the well, too. With my philanthropy, I'm opening some other doors, and it is the well. So go on and continue as to what you were saying, because you're having church first Sunday.
Well, honey, the well is what really got me, and I looked at that, and I thought about Queen Mika, and I said Queen Mika was at her own well, and you know what, Queen Valerie was at my own well, but one thing I knew about Queen Mika, she was that one that would be at the well always trying to push another sister to the well, and not only trying to push another sister to the well, but trying to push a sister to the well and then let that sister know that you can get something out the well to where you would never have to desire that thing again. So I say that to say this, that Samaritan woman was obedient to the Messiah. She gave him his strength. He was thirsty. He ended up in a town where he was not even supposed to be accustomed or have any interaction with the Samaritans. But there he was. The whole story led me to understand a lot of times it's not going to be the people that look like us. It's not going to be our friends. It's not going to be our family members. It's not going to be the people that dress like us, that drive like us, that get the bank accounts like we do, because you know what? Some of our bank accounts are in the negative. When you are walking and operating in your purpose, the higher power will send people that don't look nowhere like you just because of you knowing that you needed to be at a well. One day you may just be in the supermarket. And your purpose will lead you to the supermarket, but there could be a stranger that's in that supermarket that will be your Messiah. And that stranger can feed into your vision. So as I close this call today, I would say to anybody, as I would say to that little five-year-old girl, don't let nobody steal your innocence to a point that you can't dream again, to a point that you can't live again. Everybody has gifts, but only a few people understand the power of opening up your gifts. We are all gifted.
Amen.
And don't hate on another brother and sister because they choose to open their gift and operate in their gift. Because we all have the same capability, but it's your choice. It's your choice to heal, or it's your choice to stay there and be wounded. I choose to heal. I choose to be free. I choose to be liberated. I choose to be purpose-filled and purposeful. And my choice is to go out and reach out and help any and everyone that wants to make that same choice in their life. My role is now to hold them by the hand, to be the voice for the voiceless, and to let people know that against all odds, you too can make it. That is the organization that I recently birthed. I birthed that organization on May 19th of last year, Against All Odds, Still I Rise. That is my baby. I'm still nursing my baby, not quite a year old. But Against All Odds is an organization that provides tools, resources to the community so that the community can be healed in wholeness. I believe in focusing on the total well-being, which is the mind, the body, and the soul.
Congratulations with all of that. And I know we're running out of time, so I definitely want to make sure that you get your social media contacts in there. And again, our thoughts and prayers go out to your sister queen friend who was given her wings last month. And I thank you for dedicating your portion of this show to her. To God be the glory. And we honor her and her memory. And I know that you will keep her voice alive through what you're doing. Now, how can our listeners connect with you? What is a good point of direction for them? Website, social media, email, anything you want to give out?
Yes. You can reach me. I am on Facebook as Valerie Simon. I'm also on Facebook. I have a group page, Against All Odds, Still I Rise, grassroots group. But the odds is spelled ODGZ, like zebra. You can also reach me on Twitter. My Twitter handle is at Mahogany Lioness. L-I-O-N-E-S-S, because I am a Leo baby, so yes, I am a lioness, and I do roar when it's time to roar. You can also reach me on Instagram at QueenVal66. So you can also email me at the email address, the number one, unitedcommunity@gmail.com. I want to take this time to thank you, Queen Beverly Tribe. This has been an awesome opportunity for me to share a bit and a piece of my story and of my challenges, and I hope that there is something that I said that will be encouraging to someone to let them know that they can pick up their bits and their pieces and put them together and still be made whole and be fulfilled.
Amen, amen. And you continue blessings over your journey. And again, don't hesitate to reach out. I want to thank you for being my guest on The Woman at the Well. And if you'd like to hold, I'm going to go over some resources for our listeners. So again, thank you so very much, okay?
Thank you.
You're welcome. It's my honor. All right. You have been listening to Valerie Simon, a domestic violence survivor, advocate, and soon-to-be author, here on The Woman at the Well with me, Beverly Black. And I want to, in closing, go over some very vital resources. So I am going to do some reading from a book that I received, and I thought that these resources are worth passing on. So first, I'm going to go into the category of educational resources. Child Help Speak Up, Be Safe Prevention Education Curriculum is a research-based, developmentally appropriate curriculum for pre-kindergarten through 12th grade. This program helps children and teens learn the skills to prevent or interrupt cycles of neglect, bullying, and child abuse, physical, emotional, and sexual. The program uses an ecological approach to the prevention education by providing materials to engage parents and caregivers, teachers, school administrators, and community stakeholders. In addition to increasing children's ability to recognize unsafe situations and abusive behaviors and to build resistance skills, lessons focus on helping children build a responsive safety network with peers and adults who the child identifies as safe. You can visit www.childhelp.org for more info. Darkness to Light's Stewards of Children Training for Adults empowers people to prevent child sexual abuse. Their programs raise awareness of the prevalence and consequences of child sexual abuse by educating adults about the steps they can take to prevent, recognize, and react responsibly to the reality of child sexual abuse. The training also educates on what to do if you know of children being abused. For more information, visit www.d2l.org. That is d2l.org, as in darkness to light.org. Educated for Change. Swava Brooks is a survivor of child sexual abuse and the co-founder of Nationwide Child Sexual Abuse Prevention and Education. She is also a certified instructor and facilitator for Darkness to Light's Stewards of Children, as well as a certified crisis intervention specialist, a certified parent educator, and an abuse survivor coach. Swava has dedicated her life to ending the cycle of child sexual abuse through education, awareness, and by helping survivors heal and thrive. For more information, visit the website educate4change.com. Educate4change.com. PAVE, Promoting Awareness, Victim Empowerment. PAVE works to shatter the silence, prevent sexual violence, and help survivors heal. PAVE is a national nonprofit that works to engage people in a positive way to end sexual and dating violence. PAVE maintains over 50 chapters and affiliates across the country and has trained over 50,000 college students, 5,000 high school students, and over 2,500 professionals, including military service members. To learn more, visit www.pavingtheway.net. Support for Men. 1 in 6. The mission of 1 in 6 is to help men who have had unwanted or abusive sexual experiences in childhood live happier lives. They also provide information and support to family members, friends, and partners. Visit www.1in6.org. 1in6.org. Male Survivor. This organization has been a leader in the fight to improve the resources and support available to male survivors of all forms of sexual abuse in the U.S. and around the globe. Their informational programs and services help us understand males who have been sexually abused and, most important, promote actions we can all take to confront and fight the realities and destroy the myths of male sexual abuse. Visit www.malesurvivor.org. Clergy Abuse Resource, SNAP, Survivors Network of Those Abused by Priests. SNAP, Survivors Network of Those Abused by Priests, is a self-help group that supports people who have been victimized by clergy, helping them pick up the pieces of their lives, heal, and move forward. SNAP also incorporates with the news media by providing reliable information when possible as a way to help the recovery process and prevent further abuse. Visit www.snapnetwork.org. Missing Children Child Abduction. National Center for Missing and Exploited Children. Established in 1984, the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children is a leading nonprofit organization in the U.S. working with law enforcement, families, and professionals to help find missing children, reduce child sexual exploitation, and prevent child victimization. Visit toll-free hotline, their national toll-free hotline is 1-800-THE-LOST. That's 800-843-5678, and you can visit www.missingkids.com. General resources. Justice for Survivors is a subsidiary of CRUC LLC, C-R-U-C LLC, concentrating on the investigation of past sexual assaults for civil litigation. They can be reached at l.barry@comcast.net. The letter l.barry, B-A-R-R-Y, at comcast.net. Massachusetts Citizens for Children, MassKids, is the oldest state-based child advocacy organization in the country. Its mission is to improve the lives of the state's most vulnerable children through advocacy by concerned citizens. Since 1986, MassKids has served as the Massachusetts chapter of Prevent Child Abuse America. MassKids currently works to prevent child abuse through the network of the Shaken Baby Syndrome Prevention Center and the soon-to-be-launched Choose Your Partner Carefully project. It also leads the Enough Abuse campaign. Their phone number is 617-742-8555 and 866-216-1072, or you can visit www.masskids.org. Soul Reform, S-O-L Reform. This website provides current and helpful information about the statute of limitations for child sex abuse in the United States by state. The information on the website is curated by Professor Marcy Hamilton. The website is www.sol-reform.com. The National Child Traumatic Stress Network, NCTSN. The NCTSN works to accomplish its mission of serving the nation's traumatized children and their families, to raise the standard of care and improve access to services for traumatized children, their families, and the communities throughout the United States. Visit www.nctsn.org. Winged Hope Family Advocacy Foundation. Winged Hope was established in January 2013 by Jessica Nicely. As a child abuse survivor and a child abuse prevention advocate for 18 years, Jessica was feeling frustrated about the number of cases of child abuse going unprosecuted. After learning about the effectiveness of child and family advocacy centers, Jessica established Winged Hope Family Advocacy Foundation. Winged Hope programs focus on child abuse and domestic violence awareness, prevention, and treatment. The foundation helps both new and existing advocacy centers around Arizona. Visit wingedhope.org, www.wingedhope.org. And that's WINGED hope.org. Lastly, book resources. My Body Belongs to Me by Jill Starezhevsky. The straightforward, gentle book offers a tool parents, teachers, and counselors can use to help children from 3 to 10 years old feel, be, and stay safe. Letters to a Monster by Caroline D. Chavigny. This book is a compilation of letters written by survivors directed towards their abusers. Letters to a Monster is a compilation of survivors' journeys from beginning to end, and the end result is much the same theme. Just as Superman always wins, survivors will prevail. Letters of Apology, How to Stop Waiting for Permission to Be the Wonderful Person You Are by Valerie A. Utton. This book is a collection of anonymously written letters of apology combined with insights into how to get over needing, wanting, and waiting for the apology you're never going to get. You Can Help by Rebecca Street. This book educates people who want to help survivors of sexual abuse and sexual assault recover from trauma. Personal Body Safety for Kids by Nancy Good Talalas. This is an educational children's book to teach your children personal body safety in a positive and empowering way. Some Secrets Should Never Be Kept by Janine Sanders is an illustrated children's book that sensitively approaches the subject of keeping children safe from inappropriate touch. And that concludes the resource section. I want to thank each and every one of my listeners. I want to thank my guests, Letitia Baker and Valerie Simon. Again, this is season 5 of The Woman at the Well, and I cannot reiterate enough. The road to healing is paved with reflection. You may not remember the day it happened. You may not recall the time. You just know how it made you feel. Your Me Too moment changed everything, but you don't have to feel alone. Come to the well and speak your truth. Share your Me Too moment. Your strength and courage will help others. I am the author of A Wretch Like Me, From Crack Addict to Change Agent by Beverly Black. And you have been tuned in to The Woman at the Well. We will be returning on March 17th, and I hope you will come back and join me. Thank you, and God bless you.
The tears that made her blind. She felt such pain. Some spoke in anger, heard folks whisper, there's no place here for her kind. Still on she came, through the shame that flushed her face, until at last she knelt before his feet, and though she spoke no words, everything she said to her, as she poured her love for the master from her box of alabaster, died cold. in my alabaster box. I can't forget the way life used to be. I was a prisoner to the sin that had me bound. Thy spent my days, poured my life without measure into a little treasure box. My tears and dry them.